Hello and welcome to the PopBreak.com's official Oscars podcast, hosted by Marissa Carpico and Matt Taylor.
Hey everyone, this is Marissa Carpico, the film editor at thepopbreak.com. I'm here with my co-host, Matt Taylor. Say hello, Matt.
Hi, everybody.
And we are finally starting our Oscar current race podcast, the Way Too Early Oscar podcast, which we usually start in, you know, like July of the previous year, but we are starting in January this time. We're late realistically in comparison to our other years, but you know, there was a strike, things have been busy, we've been sick, things happen, you know, but finally we are here to talk about the SAG nominees. We considered talking about the Golden Globes, but then no one cares about those anymore. Me, who used to defend them, if you recall. But yeah, now it's all SAGs, baby. And, you know, it's a shame we didn't pick the Golden Globes because the SAG Award nominations are sick compared to the Globes this year. But oh well, we've made these decisions and now we must live with them. So we're just going to go through a couple of the main categories. Well, there are only a couple categories. We don't usually talk about television on this podcast. And this is kind of our first chance to talk about, you know, these movies. Obviously, we'll do more in-depth stuff when the Oscar nominations come out, like we always do. But yeah, this is our first pass at some of these, unless you follow us on Letterboxd, which, you know, you should. So let's start with like a softball, a category we never care about. Outstanding performance by a male actor in a supporting role. Sterling K. Brown is nominated for American Fiction, Willem Dafoe for Poor Things, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, and Ryan Gosling for Barbie. I mean, I think the first conversation we had was, where is Charles Melton from May December, who, you know, 2 months ago seemed like the obvious winner and now just seems like a non-entity. What are your thoughts?
It's a bummer. It is the sort of thing where I, like, you know, I don't know if I was thinking he was going to win, because the Academy really does not, you know, respond to, they don't acknowledge men until they're in their, like, 60s or over, basically. And it felt like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. or Ryan Gosling's year, basically. And but Charles Melton's so good in May, December. And it felt like the sort of thing where it's like, maybe I'll get nominated, and it's sort of like a level up for him. Because he's someone who I had seen in things that I never really thought of as like an actor to take note of until May, December, where he really blew me away. And him missing out is just such a bummer. All of the cast missing out at the SAGs is a bummer, because they're all doing really great work in this movie. And it feels, you know, pointed to not have it show up at the SAGs.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like, of course, actors will appreciate the brilliant work that was done there. And then they're like, no, we won't. So that was just wild, honestly. But yeah, it's true. Men, you know, women are awarded in the Oscars when they're ingenues, and men are awarded when they've been there forever, basically, and put in the work. You know, DiCaprio is probably the best example of that or something. But yeah, I mean, this is a decent group. I am a little surprised by this Sterling K. Brown thing, just because, I mean, he's well-liked, but that is not a well-liked performance, let's just say. Did you have concerns about it when you saw the film?
I mean, I think it is a weird performance. He's playing like a newly out gay character in the film, and I by no means care about like whether or not a straight actor is playing a gay part or whatnot. I don't think he plays it well at all. It doesn't feel like any sort of actual gay person or like like none of the internal work is there of like, you know, this person who's coming out of the closet late in life or whatever. And late in life, I mean, Pinocchio runs like in his 40s, but you know, later for the average person. And I don't think it's a bad performance. It's just a sort of thing where I think it's a testament to how popular he is. And also, you know, the SAGs are voted on by, you know, anyone with an actor's, like a SAG card, theoretically. So like, you know, there's a lot of TV actors there, and he's obviously one of like the biggest TV actors to kind of break into film. So I'm not necessarily surprised that he showed up here, and I also wouldn't be surprised if he misses the Oscar nomination, just yeah. because the voting bodies are different. But yeah, I was kind of like, I think it speaks to the popularity of American Fiction, because he can coattail his way into a nomination, basically. I was surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's some solid performances here. Like, you know, I don't know. None of them I love, but of course, we never care about actors, especially in a supporting role. But I mean, for me, I think the Gosling one is the most enjoyable and interesting performance, even though I frankly hate that character within the structure of the film. I viscerally reacted to the way people were like, oh, but he's so good in it. Yeah, but I was like, he's the villain. I hate him, you know? So yeah, like on some level, I feel weird about, you know, Ken getting the only win possibly in a Barbie movie year. But, you know, I don't know. It's the role he's born to play, and he's been very charming on the circuit. So what do I care? I love a movie star, and I just don't really feel moved by any of these other performances. And I guess this is the closest we've ever seen to him campaigning, you know, but I don't know. I'm sure Downey Jr. wants it so bad. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's kind of funny and weird that like, if Gosling was to be the only person from Barbie to go home with an Oscar, I think it would be such a strange sort of takeaway from that film and that whole, you know, moment in Hollywood. And so I also just think, you know, if we're thinking about like what the win would symbolize, I would love for Robert Downey Jr. to get this sort of Oscar, because it would be sort of a career win, because obviously he's never won yet, but also like, please never go back to Iron Man, but please continue doing this, basically. Like, you are an actual actor, remember that. And so it'll be interesting to see which of them gets it. I do think, you know, Downey Jr. is just kind of far and away the front runner here.
Yeah. He's got the age. And the prestige at this point.
The prestige, you know, in the film that I think is a real threat for Best Picture. It's like, you know, it seems like, you know, a good win. And my one other main takeaway is no disrespect to Dafoe, who I like a lot, but the wrong Poor Things guy was nominated. I really thought.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I thought Ruffalo would be the nominee, but I really, they, and I love Dafoe, don't get me wrong. I think he's.
No,
he's
but Ruffalo is the. Is like the breakout male star of that movie, and he, like, you know, is really doing something interesting and different. I mean, I think that's what's unexciting about everyone except for Gosling here is that none of this feels like a blowing away performance. It's just like it's time kind of, you know, wins or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Ruffalo just feels so like, you know, a reminder of like, oh God, that's why we love him. Yeah, I'd love to see him get nominated, and I mean, there's a possibility. This is not going to be the five in the Oscars. I really would be surprised at that.
Yeah.
Let's move on to supporting role for an actress. Emily Blunt, my beloved, for Oppenheimer. Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple. Penelope Cruz for Ferrari, for whatever reason. Jodie Foster for Naiad. And Divine Joy. Well, it's actually, apparently it's Davine Joy Randolph. I've been pronouncing it wrong completely for ages now. The Holdovers. You and I both had the misfortune of seeing Ferrari, period, and we're both frankly shocked to see anything mentioned for it. Especially, I mean, for me, like, listen, I think Penelope's fine in it, but she is playing a hysterical woman wrapped in grief for the entire thing. And they make her look like garbage for some reason, as if she's not an incredibly beautiful woman. But she has to be this sort of harpy nightmare character who could be volatile and ruin everything for Ferrari at any moment. It's a bizarre, I cannot believe this is here, especially in a year that is so stacked for supporting actresses. Like, all of these other ones are like really good, and I would not argue with them. Like, I mean, obviously I'm so in the tank for Emily Blunt, and was so thrilled by that performance, because she gets sort of the best moment in the last act to be the sort of everyone, I'm assuming, has seen Oppenheimer at this point, but she gets this sort of like moment you really want, this sort of hero moment, and it's one of the last things you get left with in the movie. So of course she gets, I mean, it's just really good for her realistically. But Danielle Brooks is a goddamn star in The Color Purple, singing her ass off and acting, doing a role that like Oprah did so definitively previously that like I worried for her, but you know, she does wonderful work. Jodie Foster feels unleashed in a way I've never seen before. Cause you haven't seen Naiad, right?
No, still? I need to watch it, but I was really,
you don't need to watch it. You have to watch it.
Yes.
That's let's get specific. And then I mean, honestly, it was, oh God, it's rough. But Jodie's great in it. I mean, she is so good in it. We're not going to mention the other performance. Davine Jo Randolph is also wonderful and understated in The Holdovers and kind of seems like the front runner right now. What's your beat on this rather stacked category and Penelope Cruz and Ferrari?
I mean, I will just say, bummer to not see Julianne Moore here.
Oh, yeah.
But, no, this is a good lineup. Obviously, I haven't seen Naiad yet, and I'm expecting the consensus from people I trust, including you, seems to be that Jodie Foster gets away innocent here. But
not just innocent. I mean, she's really good in it, actually. I have to say,
we love her, and you know, Brooks, great nomination. Divine Joy.
Davine.
Davine, okay. Davine, yeah. Joy Randolph, brilliant in The Holdovers. I've been a fan of hers for a while now, and it's like, it's always so exciting when like a character actress gets this sort of great supporting part and then becomes an Oscar front runner. It's one of my favorite Oscar narratives, and I think she's really good in the film.
The Holdovers, you know, is such a wonderful, warm piece of filmmaking that you and I both absolutely loved. And I mean, everybody I know who's seen it is just so delighted by it.
Yeah, no, my parents were talking about it all holidays, basically, of how much they enjoyed it. Penelope Cruz really seems like the one where I was like, huh? Like when that happened. And it's like, she is the best performance in it to a degree. Like, I don't think she embarrasses herself as much as a lesser
Adam Driver would does. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you know, God love her, but Shailene and her,
it's just, oh like, my God,
Italian accent. It's so funny.
It is bar none, some of the worst accent work I have ever seen in my entire life. I was humiliated for her. I was rough. Wow. She hasn't done a lot of work in the last 10 years. And if anybody sees this as a casting agent, they're not going to put her in much more.
No, it's rough. I was like, oh, girl, what, girly, what are we doing? Like, what's going on? But, no, Penelope gets away with it, like, without embarrassing herself. But it is just, like, I don't know, a lot of people professional critics who I trust wrote positive reviews of Ferrari, and I've read them, and I've just been I don't get it, girl. Like, it's
like, my boomer uncle, who literally will watch 12 hours of Blue Bloods a day, or 12 Hours of Chicago Fire and or Castle, and has honestly no interest in anything that isn't a boy movie at this point. He hated Anyone But You, but loved The Boys in the Boat, if that gives you any indication of the man's taste. Even he was like, that is one of the top 10 worst movies I've ever seen. And I was like, I agree. I can't think of a lot of worse movies I've ever seen. Like, in this moment. I mean, like, not movies that are allegedly prestige films that are gunning for Oscars, you know? Like, I've seen worse films that had no filmmaking merit at all. But, like, this is different. There was money spent on this. It's wild. I cannot believe it exists. I mean, we should have walked out. He says repeatedly afterwards, he was like, the best thing was the popcorn. Thank God we got popcorn. We almost didn't. Yeah, what a horrible film. Jesus Christ. I will be so shocked if it gets more play. I really do. Anyway, let's move on from it. Actually, I would be happy with almost anyone here, except for Penelope Cruz, who will not be nominated for an Oscar anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I mean,
I hate to root against or to wish ill on Penelope, but this isn't about her. It's about the movie, girl. It's not you.
yeah. But I'd be happy with just about it. I mean, in my heart of hearts, I do want I somehow want Emily Blunt to win, but I also don't. I don't think, not in this group. It just seems odd. Just be weird. Let's just say that. let's do male actor in a leading role. What a collection of men. Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Coleman Domingo for Rustin. Have you seen Rustin?
No, the Netflix ones, except for May December, have totally escaped me.
Okay. I've seen it, so that's fine. Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. I can talk about Rustin really quick. I actually happened to be invited to a press and industry screening or something. I don't know. There might have been voters in the audience, frankly, because half the cast was there. And Coleman Domingo and the director walked in at one point to be interviewed by Ethan Hawke, of all people. Which was wild. And then truly half the cast was in the audience. They pointed them out. And I was there with someone who has done script work for like historical pictures. And she made a wonderful point about, like, you know, it's very tough to write these kinds of things because you have to deliver a lot of information in a seamless way. And this film does not do that. It does feel like a onslaught of proper nouns and information. But Coleman Domingo was so fucking charming in the Q&A. We both were like, God, I wish I liked this movie more, because he clearly did so much work. And you can see a lot of the work on the screen. There's accent work, sort of, because there's like a tooth, like a denture prosthetic thing. There's like really intense, conversations about race and queerness. I suppose I should mention that this is a biopic essentially of Bayard Rustin, who was heavily involved in the civil rights movement in the 60s, worked with like Martin Luther King Jr., but was also sort of like pushed from the spotlight in that fight because he was openly queer and proud of it. I mean, he clearly does so much really smart work in it, and you can see it on screen, but there's something not quite gelling about the film that you and I will eventually have to talk about once you've seen it. Sure, because I suspect he's still going to be nominated for an Oscar. Would you like to tell the people how much we love Maestro collectively, actually?
It is funny. I saw Maestro in theaters at the Angelica, like shortly before it went on the streaming service, just because I was very into that trailer when Netflix dropped it, and I was like, shit, I'm gonna go seek this out in a theater. And I loved it. And then I learned like shortly after that, like people on Netflix are roasting it or whatever. And like, it's like, has it. And I was like, why? Like, it's just, it's so funny the way a lot of these movies on Netflix will just become like these memes, and I was just fully unaware of it. And it's, you know, do I think it has a grander thesis statement than like this guy is interesting? Like, no, like it doesn't, but it is very like well directed and acted and just entertaining in a way that I want to be entertained sometimes. It looks beautiful. And he, and especially Carrie, are really, really good in it. So it's like, you know, if I have to watch an Oscar bait film, which this is, like, you know, this is what I want it to look like. Because, like, this is what I would like it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, because I had heard all of that, and I was ready to be, like, really, I mean, I love Bradley from the Alias days, but, like, you know, I was ready to make fun of it. And then I was like, honestly, yeah. Does it have anything to say? No. Do I give even half a shit? Honestly, no, because it's so sumptuous and so like well choreographed. And I was kind of mad that I saw it at home, because I was like, shit, this is clearly something I should have seen in the theater, because the sound work is incredible. The cinematography is spectacular. I mean, we'll talk about it in a moment, but Carey Mulligan's entrance, if I were an actress, and I would be so mad that I didn't get that entrance, because no actress has ever been introduced better on screen. It is so incredible, that shot. I've rewound it because I was just like, that is breathtaking. I would be so mad if I were like any woman in Hollywood, because I'd be like, damn it, that wasn't me. Like, I just wouldn't have the grace to not be a bitch about it, truly. Yeah, I don't know, man. Maestro's like really fun. And like, you know, the thing that like became a meme immediately that I like saw in context, and I was like, I mean, I guess this is funny, but we are so wild, is the who left Snoopy in the foyer or whatever.
In the vestibule.
In the vestibule. I was like, I know it's some preposterous word, but yes, it's vestibule. And then when that scene ends and Snoopy goes floating by, I was like, I'm sorry, this is a masterpiece. What are we talking about?
Exactly. I completely agree. It's an incredible moment.
He's like, this is his special day. And I was like, I mean, I guess he's right. Snoopy does always appear in these things. And then there he is after this incredible fight. I mean, what a picture, honestly. It's why we go to the cinema. We come to this place for Snoopy.
Absolutely.
But I don't, you know, I don't know who's, I mean, it's probably going to be Cillian Murphy because of the Globes, and like, it just kind of feels like his year. But honestly, I wouldn't be mad at any of these, even though, no, I wouldn't be terribly mad at any of these. Again, I don't really care about actors, but like, I like all of these people and they've all done great work. Why wouldn't it be nice to see them win, you know?
Yeah, there's no real bad winner here, no. I think. Like, I think it's between Murphy and Giamatti. Like, there seems to be a lot of passion for, like, I think if Barbenheimer didn't happen this year, and often, like, they were just, like, these two movies that, like, defined the year, I think we would be talking about an easy cakewalk for Paul Giamatti, because I think he's just, like, very overdue, probably the most overdue of the actors nominated. And
By far, yeah.
Yeah, but I just think this is a year where, you know, underestimate Oppenheimer at your own peril, basically. And the one person I would really like to see show up, and I don't necessarily know who's at most vulnerable, I would love to see Zac Efron show up at the at the Oscars, who I think is so good in The Iron Claw.
He literally is the best male performance of the year. It's him and fucking Charles Melton, and it's crazy that the two of them are not even like involved. It's wild. I mean, you know, the Globes, I understood because he wasn't eligible, and I can't remember if he was eligible for this. Was he?
I think so, because people were really hoping he was. Would pull through. Yeah,
that's what I thought. Okay, I thought so too, but I was like, surely he couldn't have been eligible. How could he be not here? But yeah, he was, and yeah, it's just crazy because he's like unbelievable in that movie, and that movie is like, I really think it's one of the best of the year, and people just are like sleeping on it. I don't get it.
No, it's one of my favorites of the year, and, you know, I think it's going to be one that we're going to look back at in, like, 5 years and be like, damn, should have been more remembered.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I gave it a very nice review. It's not my fault. I'm on the right side of history. Go to Rotten Tomatoes and see it, or go to thepopbreak.com. And I glowingly gave that a review, especially him. But I have no regrets. Okay, so it's down the outstanding, you know, female actor in a leading role. Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Carey Mulligan for Beloved Maestro, Margot Robbie for Barbie, Emma Stone for Poor Things. It really feels like it's Gladstone's to lose at this point. Do you think there's any chance anyone else? Well, I mean, no, I suppose that's not right. I keep forgetting that they both her and Emma Stone did wonderful work at the Golden Globes, and it could be either one of them. I think you and I have not talked about this yet, but we saw Poor Things together at NIFF, and have loved it from the beginning. You know, it's a controversial, slightly film, but I don't know. I love it, and you love it, and I'm going to stick with that, I think. And Emma Stone is easily the best actress of the year. I think Gladstone is really good, but I've seen Killers of the Flower Moon twice now, and the second time, the first time she felt pushed to the side in that last act, and the second time she really felt incidental in a way that I found frustrating for the film overall, honestly. We'll talk about that film in greater detail at some point, obviously, because it's going to get nominated for Picture, I'm sure. But Emma Stone is, like, to me, feels like the actress of her generation in this movie. Like, it could have been another girl for so long, you know, it could have been many other girls, but she's unbelievable in this. I mean, who do you think is going to win here? Because I think it could be either one, honestly.
It's going to be, you know, I think the hardest race to predict for a while. Like, I completely agree. With this performance with Emma Stone, I was just like, oh, like, she really laid down the gauntlet of, like, I'm untouchable, basically.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a good performance. It's so out of this world. And just, like, I can't imagine someone else giving a performance like this. And it's such a testament to how well she works with Yorgos as, like, a director and everything. I don't know. It is such an easy pick. As much as I do like Lily Gladstone, as much as I, like, honestly, obviously, I haven't watched Naiad yet, and I don't really think that's going to change my opinion much on who.
No, and Annette is awful in it. I have to say, Annette it is one of the worst performances of her career. She is abysmal in it in a way that I think is shocking, actually.
Yeah, it's just the sort of thing where it's like, in this year's lineup, not counting Annette, I think Lily Gladstone, Margot Robbie, and Carey Mulligan all do like would be great winners in any other year. Uh-huh. It just happens to be that like Stone is giving what will probably
the performance of a career.
Yeah, exactly. I can't like, and if she has another performance this good, she's going to be like Imperial phase, basically. Like it's
no,
like,
she'll literally become fucking Katharine Hepburn. She elevates. Yeah. All of a sudden, she becomes Katharine Hepburn. Truly.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this is just an out of this world performance, and I hope she gets. Yeah, so I know she just got an Oscar relatively soon, relatively speaking, like recently. But like, she deserves undeniable. A second one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's undeniable. And I you know, when we first saw it, I was like, you know, of all the girls of that group, maybe she wouldn't have been my guest to get a second Oscar this quickly, but she has to. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I am also really happy to see Margot Robbie here because I think like people miss how complex the Barbie performance is just because there's a lot of other stuff going on. So, you know, it's good that her other fellow actors have noticed.
Yeah, she is so funny in Barbie in a way that I was like, where is the, you know, as much as I don't want to make up like a whole thing, but it's like the energy we have for Ken, for Ryan Gosling, should be for her. Because I'm just like, she's so funny in Barbie.
She really is. And it has to carry something off very difficult. I mean, we have never had the chance to really talk about the movie, and obviously we will at some point, but like, my feelings on that movie are so complex, but I think about that movie more than any film that I've thought about in like probably the last 10 years. I mean, I just constantly am thinking about Barbie and what it means in a way that like I truly never could have predicted. I thought I was just there to have a nice time, And that's really not what happened. So, like, I don't know, man.
It was 2023. There's no such thing as having a nice time at the movies. There's got to be some emotional landmines to walk through.
Yeah, I mean, surely I saw that. I did Barbenheimer in the as alphabetically as God intended. At, you know, Barbie first, Oppenheimer second, and I really at the end of Oppenheimer was like, you know, honestly, this was light, the way to go, because this is lighter than the way I felt after Barbie.
okay, you did two different boroughs too. You did the true sicko.
Oh my God! I was out of my fucking mind that day. I was a sicko, absolutely. Okay, so let's do best picture, as it were, for this, for the SAGs, outstanding performance by a cast in a motion picture. American Fiction, Barbie, The Color Purple, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer. I mean, honestly, what a serve! What is this, such a good category? Like, this, I obviously there won't be just five in the Oscars because they must do this to us now. But if this were the five, what a picture of the year in film, don't you think?
Yeah, it's like, you know, that would be a good, I would be like, where's Poor Things? But other than that, I would be like,
yeah, okay, fine. Work, yeah.
Good for you. You're right. You. Like, this is a good five. And I mean, you know, I think specifically Barbie and Oppenheimer, it's like, those casts are such snapshots of 2023 in entertainment, basically. Where I was like between the two of them, you have basically like 90%.
You have every actor in Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like having the two of them there, I'm like, this is good. I like this. I'm happy that this is how it shook out. And I'm very curious to see who wins it, because I do think it will sort of like, it's the sort of thing, it really does feel like it's between Barbie and Oppenheimer for Best Picture. And is the thing I keep thinking about is like, will it be a split year of like they give director to one and picture to the other? And if that's the case, I feel like director almost has to go to Nolan and then you would have Barbie go for picture. And I think we'll get a really good indication of where the passions lie from whoever wins this. And it's going to be like, like, no matter who wins, I think it's a good pick, to be honest.
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually don't think the Barbie, momentum is there at this point for a win. I think it would be, I don't know. I think it's, I don't know if anything is going to beat Oppenheimer. I mean, again, you're right. As soon as we figure out who wins the SAG award, I think we'll know exactly who's going to win picture, frankly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I do think people don't think of Barbie in that prestige way on some level. So I'd be surprised if it weren't Oppenheimer. But you know, people fucking love American Fiction in the industry, and it's getting all those like little screenings that people are doing. So I don't know. I really think it could go a lot of different ways, because like there's a lot of affection for a lot of these movies. I mean, on some level, it's like I almost want to throw The Color Purple, because that is a great cast. And I don't think that a lot of them are getting the sort of a recognition they could be realistically. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, that Fantasia is so good in the last like hour of that. It's crazy. Like, she is unreal in that movie. Like, there was a woman in my audience who just could not hold back cheering after I'm Here was over, and I agreed with her. It was so phenomenal. Also, what a treat to have Sierra be in like an Oscar winning movie. I just think that would be a delight. All right, that is the SAG Awards, the ones we care about. I mean, we love TV, but that's not what this is about, you know.
Jeremy Strong was snubbed. I will not acknowledge the TV.
Oh my God!
The TV nominations.
Of course.
Ryan Cox, I have no thoughts. Two episodes of Succession this season, and still got in, the disrespect.
But yeah, that is weird. Actually, I saw that, and he's also like probably going to win the Emmy too. And I'm like, that's wild, man. I think that's a little much.
He's, you know, he's a character. I love him as a just a figure in pop culture right now.
I know. Please, I will never forget when I was at your New Year's Eve party years ago, and we were watching the friggin' ball drop thing, and no, every celebrity that came on, nobody cared about. But then you and your friends, who were like 27 at the time, screamed in delight over Brian Cox as if it were Elvis or something in the 60s. It was so wild. I was like, where am I right now? It was surreal. I'll never forget it.
We love him. We love him.
You do. It's incredible.
We want him to yell at us.
I know. I just couldn't believe. I was like, what is going on? All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. We will be back, I'm sure, once the SAGs air, and probably, I don't know, maybe we'll probably come back for the DGAs or something. We'll certainly be back the second the Oscars are nominations come out.
In like two weeks, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, very soon. I may be, half alive from whatever primary has just occurred after that or before that. So, you know, that might be an issue, but otherwise I'll try to be there at least conscious. All right. You can find more of my work on thepopbreak.com. I'm at Marissa Carpico on pretty much every platform except for Twitter now. Matt, where are you?
I'm on Letterboxd, baby. Matt T. That's it. Woo-woo.
Yep, that's it. Don't follow him anywhere else. No, all right,
you can't
that's
find it. Me.
All right, just me. All right, thanks for listening, everyone.